to her utmost. Riding hard for a fortnight across the long spine of England to catch up with the king's forces. And now, at the edge of Edward's camp at Berwick, he finds he has missed the battle against the Scots by a single day. The only question that remains is whether he's missed the war. It's a victory, at least. Harry can tell by the way cheerful men-at-arms lurch through camp, well into their cups, even though the sun has barely reached its midday apex. A tipsy longbowman, flushed red from the July heat, points out the knight's field to Harry and passes him a flask of something that smells like it could raise the dead. Harry refuses. He doesn't feel like drinking. He's furious at fate, at the summer crowds on the Great North Road, at having missed out on a chance to prove himself again. And much as he knows it's a craven and terrible thing to feel, he's angry at his mother for having died then. It was her illness that made Harry miss the marshalling of troops in Scotland. Instead of leaving with Sir Simon like a proper squire, he'd had to run home to Devon to attend to her last days. He knows it wasn't his mother's final act of protest against Harry following in his father's footsteps, training for knighthood, fighting the Scots. But it feels like it. Harry knees Star, his palfrey, towards the bright pavilions of the knight's campground. He scans the sea of fluttering pennants, looking for a faded, frayed red flag with a white lion rampant, the Atwood coat of arms. Sir Simon will no doubt fill him in on what happened at Halidon Hill and how he missed Edward of Windsor's first great victory against the Scots. As Harry navigates his horse through the muddy field, past the canvas palaces of noblemen, towards the smaller, shabbier tents of country knights at the far edge of the field, he lets his frustrations boil within him. He grew up listening to the stories of King Arthur, Gawain, and the other great knights of history, while the real England writhed through a long winter of treason and infighting with Edward of Carnarvon, his French queen Isabella, and her lover, Lord Mortimer. Now, finally, the country is reaching a sort of springtime, under the hand of the young Edward of Windsor. And Harry is 19 years old, the perfect age for a squire to prove himself in battle. Except the battle was yesterday. Perhaps there will be more fights against the Scots, but even to Harry's young eye, this doesn't look like an army that is getting ready to march anywhere but home to harvest. Perhaps there will be war with France in a few years. Its 400-year-old Capet dynasty is fighting for life after Philip the Fair's three sons, sibling kings, have each died without a male heir. The French barons are discontented and mutinous, unhappy with the country cousin of Valois who has been placed on the throne. The other choice is Edward of Windsor himself, for his mother, Isabella, is a Capet princess, sister to kings. This has fired up a feeling in England of pride and hope, of daring glances across the Channel, and a thought of one day. England has Gascony, sure, but once it had so much more. Once, and maybe again. But first, King Edward has committed to restoring Balliol and the disinherited lords of Scotland to their rightful homes. On his long journey to Berwick, Harry had such daydreams about the feats of arms he would perform at Sir Simon's side, saving Baron Montague's life, saving the king's life, capturing Archibald Douglas, the guardian of Scotland, enough for a squire to dazzle a baron or a king, enough to earn his knight's belt. Harry reins up at Sir Simon's tent at the most unfashionable edge of the field and calls out for him as he slides off his palfrey. There's no answer. He looks around. One of Sir Simon's men-at-arms, Edgar, hustles over from where he's playing dice with a small group in front of another tent. Harry notices that Edgar looks shocked, but then Edgar isn't the brightest and always looks a bit stunned, so he doesn't think anything of it. Until Edgar opens his mouth.
"Do you not know, Master Harry?"
Edgar says in English. Harry swallows, his throat dry with road dust. No discussion ever ends well when it begins like that. Edgar wipes his broad, spade-like hands down over his bony cheeks, pulling at the flesh there.
"They got him."